you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talking Monkeys, the official podcast of 12 Monkeys.
I can't say it without that.
I can't, because I want to talk monkeys, and I'm so happy talking that monkeys. We're talking monkeys. My name is Clark Wolf. I'm your host, and we are going to be diving into the second episode of the season titled Primary, which is great. And I have these wonderful, wonderful people here with us. We have the two stars, the two leads of the show, and our co-creator and showrunner for season two. So we have Mr. Aaron Stanford, Miss Amanda Shul, and Mr. Terry Metalis.
You nailed it.
Got them all that time. I'm so happy. So thank you guys so much for chatting. This is really exciting. And after a crazy premiere for season two, I feel like we covered a lot of ground. And now here we are kind of in full swing, picking up exactly where we left off for the most part in the premiere episode. So I actually wanted to kind of start just with the first line of the episode, which is, where are you right now? This great kind of voiceover that comes from Cassie, which obviously is reminiscent of Cole's monologue and voiceover from season one. And we're seeing Cassie in the future and what is happening to her. And although, you know, it's a sort of a quick montage, I feel like we learn and see a lot in this short amount of time. So Terry and Amanda, you know, do you want to talk about sort of the decision to show us this little bit of her backstory in this condensed way, and Amanda, like, communicating all that you needed to communicate in just these quick images?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so this one was written by Sean Tretta and directed by Magnus Martin, and just David Grossman did the premiere. We wanted to, because at the end of the last episode, she had been there, we knew she had been in the apocalypse for 8 months. It seemed like such a cheat not to see that, and how great to do Cassie, over some Otis Redding again, and this time see her perspective of it all and see her learning to live like Cole lived and to face off against scavengers. And she's got the cool mask because she's not immune to that world, and she's bonding with Deacon. And now she's the new traveler. So it was a cool way to quickly get a glimpse of what transpired in the last 8 months.
I actually remember when you told me that you were going to do that, that when you had the idea to do that, we were in New York doing press for season one. I walked out of an elevator and you were standing right there at the elevator, and the look on your face wasn't just, I was bumping into Terry. It was, he said, I was just writing this into my phone that I had this idea to do the Where Are You Right Now with you in
C. Oh, I was at the gym, because that's usually where I come up when I write emails to myself. I write emails to myself at the gym or on a hike, and then I find them later. And then the door opened up and you were there. And I was like, oh my God, I just had this cool thing. We don't do that. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I remember him telling me that. And I remember thinking about that for the months leading up to, you know, before I actually got to do it and what that meant. And obviously, I was familiar with Aaron's version of it from the pilot in Detroit. And it was important to express and convey so much in the short amount of time. There were actually even a couple other little bits that we had that didn't make it to the final cut. But I think everything, there were a couple other things of getting the gun put together and just a few little tiny details, not big details, and that weren't necessary. I mean, you see everything, and it's also just the way that it shot, and the tone, the colors, and just how drab everything is in the reality of it. And then that, juxtaposed with the violence, with the bleak nature of that world, I think was very well done by everyone.
And I love that last line, not every caterpillar becomes a butterfly, because right. I think it's, I mean, obviously it's pointing to transformation, but, you know, as we talked about in the last episode and as we saw in the premiere, this role reversal almost, you know, like of Cassie. Yeah, Cassie is the new traveler, and what she has become isn't this necessarily this beautiful, you know, version of herself. Mm-hmm. It's a much darker, scarier version
of
herself.
It's a necessity.
Yeah.
Right. And that is it's good that you notice that phrase. That's something that I think will be brought back, and that the audience, astute audience members will pick up on.
I just wanted to say, that's so, because yeah, we both looked at each other when you said that. That line does come back. But the funny story about that line, at least to me, is that was a placeholder line. I was giving, Sean was in my office, and I'm like, it just needs some kind of metaphor, you know, some kind of thing about change that you do, you know, I don't know, like not every caterpillar becomes a butterfly. And I'm like, just something like that, but better. And then he put that in. I'm like, wait, you just kept the, and he's like, no, I think it's pretty cool, man. And I'm like, I don't know. And it actually worked in the voiceover. And the more we thought about it, it you'll see that it plays a part later on.
Yeah. Well, and so speaking of, you know, we just we kind of drop right in to the present, or our 2016. We're in 2016 now, yeah? Okay, because I realized, like, I got all the way through episode one and I was writing 2015. It's like when the new year comes and you're writing the thing on your checks and you haven't quite changed over. So I had to realize, okay, no, we're in 2016 now. But okay, so we're there, and we're back on the rooftop where we left off in the end of episode one. And I personally really loved the choice to see it. You know, when we see the bullets come, when we know these men are being shot, we see it in front of their faces. And in this time we see it, we see Cassie's face and we see her kind of doing the action. And to me, it was just like this really jarring and awesome choice. That's just a little side note. I liked it.
It took a while to get that particular shot also. That was the first time. Are you remembering now?
That, yeah. Remember that? Oh, no, you weren't there. You were in the trailer.
He was suffering through it. He was having to... but do we know what? Let me just defend myself. I was blinking because I was getting gunpowder all over my face. No excuse, Terry said. I was getting gunpowder at my face, blowing back. And they would clean the gun, and still I was getting it. And they were like, we really kind of need you not to blink. And I was like, I'm trying so hard.
I thought it was fine early on. I'd be like, when people fire guns, they blink sometimes.
Yeah, but know? I think it's we like... really wanted to hammer in the fact that it was, you know.
Your eyes do not need moisture. Yeah. Now that you've been in the apocalypse for
Kevin Spacey doesn't blink in House of Cards. Neither should Cassandra Rayleigh when she's popping caps in The Bad Guys.
But your credit, you were the one, because there was a couple we were like, okay, we could live with that, and you're like, no. I'm doing it again. There was like four, and you're like, no, I'm going to do it. And that last one is the last time we did it. Yeah.
Well, it was very Sarah Connor moment. Yeah. So after, you know, we have the scene, you know, that we had seen in the last episode, Ramsey joins you guys on the roof. And, I wrote down, can we use words that we use in the show on this podcast?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I wrote down, Cassie has no time for this shit. And yeah. I kind of love how the second she sees Ramsey, she's like, nope. Over you, not into it. And this Jennifer Goins lady's here, and I hate her. Like, you know.
She's double packing.
Yeah.
She's got one on Ramsey, one on Jennifer and Cole. She's
that's right.
Not,
it was kind of badass.
I like Ramsey going, this again? Because they're now another standoff.
So, and Cole, you, or Aaron, you know, Cole, obviously, he talks Jennifer down, and that is kind of cool. And it's amazing, too, because there's so much hardware going on, and yet it was just a matter of saying, nope, don't do that, and she's like, okay.
She'll listen to him above anybody else. I mean, that's their dynamic.
Yeah, Cole has always been the Goins whisperer. He can... He influences her in a way that nobody else can.
Otter eyes.
So, and then they hop into their sweet ride, And yeah, and the four of them. So this also was really cool. Had we seen all four together before?
No.
Yeah, that was awesome.
This is the first time we see all four big heroes.
It was very cool, and it was a tense moment, obviously. Everybody seems like they're on a different side, you know, and yet, but there was something going on with Jennifer in that scene during their ride to the hangar.
Yeah, well, she's listening intently. I mean, you've seen the episode by now. You know that Jennifer is how Cole gets home. When Cassie says, I think she says it was August 2nd, 2044, I believe was the date or something close to that. You see Jennifer clock that because time means a lot to her. Numbers mean a lot to her. And that is exactly how she knows in the year 2044, when she's old, to send the daughters to grab Jones to bring Cole home.
Very cool callback to the daughters, too. Yeah. I love the daughters from season one.
Yeah, we love the daughters, too. It was cool to be able to bring them back. And that scene in the van is fun, too, because we've never done a car, and here's our four major characters in this van together. It was one of those things that could fall on its face pretty easy. But and then right after that, just speaking to really cool shots, is that hangar bay opening up, and that hero shot of all four of them walking towards the plane is one of my favorite shots.
It's very cool. Very cool. So they get the virus, they torch it.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, it's kind of big, kind of important.
Time. Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. So, you know, one of the things that struck me was how soon in this season that happened, you know, because I think if you're a viewer, you could be sitting there going, oh, that's going to, you know, honestly, Cole and Cassie holding the gun on each other. You know, I've seen that image in the promotion, but I didn't think that was coming at the end of episode one.
Yeah, well, neither did the writers, the studio, and the network. So the room had been active for about 3 weeks, and I woke up and I do sort of the writer's room. Yeah, the writer's room. I kind of start a writer's day on a long walk and kind of collect my thoughts and then kind of go in with ideas and direction if I can. Usually a lot of caffeine helps that walk. And that day I just was like, we have to do it. We have to change time. We need a victory. Let's set the plague back. Let's do it. And I went in and I was like, okay, we're going to destroy the plague at the top of episode two. And they all looked at me like I was fucking crazy. And for the next 3 hours, we argued. And most of us were against it, actually. And then, but Sean wasn't, who was writing the episode. He was like, I was like, no, we have to do it. We have to do it for this reason. We have to do it for this. And Sean was like, absolutely. It makes the most sense. We have to kind of move that. We are essentially taking a break from the plague story because there is this bigger threat right now, the messengers, and where did they go, and what exactly are the Army of the 12 Monkeys up to? So at the end of the day, I looked at Sean and I was like, I don't know, too many people are against this. I don't think we can do it. Cut to, we were on a notes call and on the second episode, and we were like, the first kind of story outline came in as it was missing something big. And on the notes call, I said, but I just jumped in. I'm like, what if we burn the virus? We change time. And everybody's like, oh my God, that's great. So we went and we did it, which is good. And it was a lesson to kind of listen to your gut too, I think. And it worked great because it was a more organic way into meeting Michael Hogan's character, who is great as Eklund. And reintroducing Lasky, you know, who died last season at Spearhead. We always knew we wanted to bring him back.
I love Lasky.
It's great. And that reveal is great. We love Murray. He's adorable. So that was just the sort of behind the scenes of how that came about.
Well, and as a result of the, I do want to ask you about the visual style, about, because, you know, like I was thinking about time travel shows, movies, a lot of times when time is resetting itself, you don't necessarily see that, or you don't necessarily spend time with that. And to see it, I was like, wow, that's a lot goes into that, though, because you have to decide, well, okay, is it colors? Is it, you know, is it slow motion? Is it this? Is it that? Like, can you talk about those?
Absolutely.
Decisions?
No. So Sean is a very visual writer. It's and he writes pretty much in an unproducible way. He's so visual. But we knew we had to double down. If we were going to change time, we wanted to do it really great. So that was a thing where we brought in Chris Byrne, who's an amazing director who worked on Hannibal, did a lot of the visual sequences in Hannibal with the black, oily, antlered Hannibal visions and dream things. And Chris he's amazing to work with and just totally gets the show, totally gets the aesthetic of the show, gets what we're doing, and designed the whole thing, designed that whole sequence. We shot it over like 3 weeks. And then it was passed over to Folk, the visual effects company in Montreal, and they killed it, you know? And then I have to say, you know, for me on this show, the sort of cherry on top is the score. Is Trevor Rabin and Paul Linford. And Paul wrote that piece, that big long piece. And emotionally, the turn and the change of the chords when Jones goes into that room and Hannah's blanket, you know, is still there. That's the show, you know. So I think we were firing on all cylinders.
Well, there. Just to touch on that real fast, we were just, you know, off mic watching a couple of clips real fast before we started recording. And Amanda, you asked this great question about, you know, why does Jones go in there? And, you know, obviously Hannah is her character's, you know, underlying like the heart of her character. But why, you know, why did she go in there?
Exactly for that reason. If Hannah's name is no longer on that blanket's not there, did she change time? And ultimately, it does fluctuate for a moment, but the name is still on the blanket, which means her mission is not over.
All right. Good answer. So let's go back to 2016, because there's still some mad tension between you two at the airplane hangar. So, you know, Cassie is kind of, they burn the virus. That mission, portion of the mission has been accomplished in terms of destroying the virus for now. However, Cassie's kind of like, look, we got to kill these guys. And Cole's like, nope, not a good idea. And one of the things that I loved was, you know, this.
You say Aaron used to call yourself Gandhi. Remember that? Yeah, Cole's Gandhi.
He's Gandhi this season. Yeah. He's decided that that passive resistance is the way to go.
Well, good. they, you know, but I love this conversation between the two of you where, you know, Cassie essentially says, like, look, you've forgotten the mission. And that comes after, I think she uses Cole's tether on Ramsey and says, look, we're going to get this info, sends him back. But she tells Cole, you forgot the mission. I'm curious for both of you, you know, since Aaron, your character was the one telling Amanda's character about the mission in the first place, is Cole kind of like, how dare you? Or is he kind of like, oh, well, maybe, kind of?
Yeah, I think it does rub him the wrong way, because nobody knows about the mission more than he does. And he's also just, he's shocked because it's not the Cassie that he knows. It's not who he knows her to be, and it's not the person. She's no longer the person who influenced the change in him. So I think there's also a feeling of betrayal there.
For sure. And so, Amanda, you know, for Cassie to use that kind of language after saying, we need to wipe out this threat, and him saying, no, 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 let them live, and her saying, you know what, I'm over it. Your character makes these decisions. Like, she is a doer. And I kind of love that she's like, all right, I'm going to take this over. Can you talk a little bit about just about that sequence or that scene in general?
Very judgy this season.
Cassie is?
Yes.
Takes one to know one. I think that when we shot that, I wanted to make sure that there was a lot more than the words that were spoken between the two of them. Because even when they weren't together over the last 8+ months, he was the reason she was where she was. And granted, he did save her life in putting her there. So she has a lot to, and I know that Aaron's going to know not.
That. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did save my life.
Oh, yuckster. I knew you were going to comment on that. But there's also, she's flummoxed by his choice. And I knew, guys. Amanda has very, you are very smart words.
Her own F words.
No,
Excellent vocabulary. We're not making fun of you.
Be nice to Amanda. She's never going to come back and do this show again.
We're not going to.
She's never going to talk monkeys with us ever again. You guys keep picking on her.
This is all just leading back to Aaron looking at that picture on the board. Nerd. Nerd. Just,
Flummoxed, there's no way that word has been used since 1943. It's just brilliant. Yeah.
Anyway, that she's just perplexed. Is that a more tangible?
I love flummoxed. Okay. We don't have a problem with flummoxed.
You kind of did.
We are delighting it.
at the fact that he's not on board with her. I mean, this is mind-boggling to her. We have this opportunity to knock out these two birds right here, right now, get back to 2043 and pick it up from where she left off. And the fact that he is not on the same page, and they've been on the same page the entire first season, they were on the same page. They got into a rhythm by the end that they were just so in conjunction, and suddenly, no, this isn't, you know, Aaron said this isn't the person that Cole knew. This is not the Cole that Cassie knew either. This is very flummoxing.
Okay. Well, if I may, because this might be reaching, and I'm, you guys know, I'm only as far as this episode, so I don't know. But, you know, obviously there is a bit of a romantic relationship between Cole and Cassie, even if it is sort of under the surface, I guess. Would you guys agree with that?
It's really under the surface right now. I mean, they are definitely, there's an attraction there. Yeah. For sure. Clearly they have complicated feelings for each other.
Okay.
Thoughts?
If it were on Facebook, it would be that it's complicated.
Okay, so that's... So that's fair, right? So my follow-up is,
look... Is
that
really a thing on Facebook?
I don't know.
Yes, it is. It's complicated. Well, but so my question is, and again, I may be reading too much into this, but, you know, it's no secret that Jennifer Goins has feelings for Cole. Am
yes.
I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So does Cassie see him protecting her a little bit? And is she kind of like, excuse me, because, you know, towards the end of season one, the two of them go and confront Jennifer in that boardroom and
slap.
Yeah, the slap heard around the world. But am I crazy for thinking
this? No, there's definitely, and it is addressed later in the season,
it's addressed in this episode also, but it was actually edited out. The conversation with Jones. Originally, when Cassie said to Jones, Cole has abandoned the mission. And Jones says to Cassie, how do you know? And there's a little bit of back and forth. Are you sure? The original line was, I'm sure he held a gun on me to defend Jennifer. And that was
yeah.
changed.
Yeah, I think we didn't. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a bit, as it was written and how we originally shot it, there was a little bit more of a betrayal from a woman's standpoint.
Yeah, and that's one of those things you take out either in the editing room, either for any number of reasons, for time or performance. or really, in that case, it was probably... I think we would really cut it because you don't necessarily need to say it. I feel like it's clear. There is definitely...
My spidey senses are...
For sure. Okay. Absolutely.
All right. We'll see. We'll see later in the season. I'm sure we'll get into it. Okay. So after this confrontation, Cassie splinters back, leaving Cole and Jennifer alone together at the hangar. And, you know, back in 2044, time has... Like, things have changed, but not quite the way that they maybe thought. This is something too, and I there's a lot that goes on with the time travel element in this episode, and I just want to touch on it for the fans, because one of the things that is so cool about this show is that it's like things happen, but they don't happen necessarily the way that you would think, the way that they have traditionally carried out in time travel stories. And, you know, you told that story earlier about, you know, moving the needle just a little bit, but, you know, the idea that these huge ramifications haven't happened, but just enough. I mean, I'm assuming that's just enough to give everyone hope in order
to continue.
That's
what it is. They haven't had a victory in a long time, and it's proof that they can make a change, I think, which is an important, you know, for the audience to understand that there are times in the show where you want to pull out your hair because it feels like they're stuck in a loop. It's always going to happen this way. It's fate. But then there's the opposite that happens, was that Cole can make a change. He can save Ramsey, the witness, whoever he is, whatever he's foreseen, he's struggling too. So there is hope that our heroes can turn this around and make the changes. Having said that, they're facing an enemy who knows their moves. They call him the witness for a reason. He has seen enough to know, and it comes at least from a place enough to know what they're going to do or what they need to do. So it's complicated. Facebook page.
It's complicated.
But to that,
that's Bane's Facebook page.
Mr. Wayne.
To that point, though, you know, when Cassie does go back and she has that conversation with Jones and they're kind of like downloading to each other, like what happened. I kind of love that a little bit later on, Jones is sitting around the table with all these scientists and she's sort of getting them up to speed. Was that important from a writer's perspective to kind of inform the audience like, hey, guys, this is what's going on?
Yeah, well, we thought it was, yeah, not necessarily for the audience, but what we liked about it, too, was they were scientists who could accept that Jones is like, took these injections, time changed around me, what I remember is not what you remember, and they're like, okay, that's crazy, but we're dealing with time travel. And it was a great way to reveal Lasky and Eklund.
Sure, yeah. And Jonesy's...
And I love those scenes. I love the scenes with the scientists. One of my favorite scenes from last year was actually from episode 3 where they're all arguing, which is just, and Andrew is, this is going to Haiti is preposterous. He's our C-3PO on the show. and Jones chain smoking. I love that. I wish we could do more of it. We often run out of time, but I would watch a whole show of that.
And Jones's boyfriend, who it's complicated with now because she doesn't
David
even
Eklund,
know.
Dr. David Eklund, yes.
So is this going to play out? Is this going to be important?
Well, I mean, I think it's certainly a new side of Jones that we've never seen before, is in another world, in another reality, she had a relationship and was open to that. She wasn't 100% focused on this mission, that there was another side to her. So whether or not this Jones will be open to that is a question, but it seems as though Eklund he's pretty cool. He's like, look, it took me a while to get through to you the first time. I'm going to try it again. I think that's a fun thing.
I love that line. You know, one of his favorite parts about the relationship was breaking down the walls, and now he gets to do it again. I thought that was such a strangely romantic.
Yeah, he's not insecure about it.
Yeah.
And for us, we were huge. We're all Battlestar Galactica fans, and Todd Stashwick is, but you know, so just having him on set gave this like really great feeling, you know, and every once in a while he'd throw in a frack. Or an oh my gods, and we'd be like, oh, it's so great, Colonel Ty.
So, all right, let's get back to 2016. So Jennifer and Cole check into this hotel. The Emerson Hotel. And this hotel is a beautiful hotel, and we're going to be spending a lot of time.
2016 is not beautiful.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, the room
maybe one day it was.
Once grand.
Yeah, it was a once grand hotel.
Indeed. But we will be spending a little bit of time there this season, yeah?
We're going to see it in a few different time periods. Okay. It's one of those cool things where, you know, you can go to certain hotels in New York or in Boston or anywhere that even in Toronto, these once grand hotels that aren't so grand anymore and have one too many ATMs and one too many hookers in the lobby. But at one point, this was like one of the best... Amanda, you've totally been to these hotels.
No, I'm just laughing that there was like one too know, many.
We all know these.
We all know these hotels.
3-4 hookers.
I like how Terry's like...
Five, six.
I like how Terry's like...
You know what
like,
I'm talking about, right,
know,
Aaron?
They have them in New York. They have them in Toronto. They have them in Boston.
You go down Sunset, corner of... You know the one with the coffee maker in the corner?
That's a different podcast.
But the idea that... that it wasn't always this way. You know, that the old downtown LA is a great example of some hotels that were really once the best hotel in the world that aren't so much anymore.
Absolutely. Okay, so once we get into the hotel, Jennifer is having a little bit of a tough time, to say the least. And she has this moment of, you know, her purpose, and we're cross-cutting with Olivia's words, and obviously this is really, really intense. And Cole is just trying to, you know, stay on track, get a hold of Jones, present day, which he knows which she told him not to do, but he knows that he has to. And, you know, there's a lot going on in this scene. And Aaron, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about sort of Cole having to stay on top of all of this, because, and I'm not trying to be flip about it, but you have this slightly insane woman kind of freaking out, and you know she likes you, and she also is gonna, like, maybe hurt herself, and you've got to handle your other business. Cole's got a lot going on in this scene.
Jennifer's a handful, and you know, he finds himself in the position of babysitter, and you know, he's the one that made the decision to spare her life and not kill her, and now, as in many traditions, now he's responsible for her, and she becomes his problem, and yeah, he has to manage all the mission and all the other variables while at the same time trying to make sure she doesn't jump out the window. So yeah, it's frustrating.
A tall order. And during sort of Jennifer's, you know, trouble, I guess, what she says something about primary, and that's the name of this episode.
Yeah, Olivia, she says that Olivia called her primary.
Yeah.
And that she knew that she could see the changes in time, which is something we hinted at last season.
Mm-hmm.
In episode 11, Jennifer would say things like green to red, everything's changing. She definitely said a few things that led us to believe she was more than just crazy, that she was connected to this mythology in some way. So we're definitely exploring. Being primary is an important concept. We're going to learn more about it, certainly in the next episode as well.
All right. That's a good tease. So they decide to, they come and knock on the door. The hotel staff and says, we made a mistake. We actually are going to give you room 607, which they had asked for in the first place. At first I was worried, because when that manager makes the call, I was like,
he's calling the army.
Yeah.
Well, they hadn't checked their residence list, and James Cole is listed as a resident. Yeah. So, and that's where we get into Suite 607, which is one of our major locations this season.
And we find the photo.
Yeah.
The suite photo. So apparently in 1944, Cole and Cassie were happy and smiling for a picture.
They will be.
They haven't been there yet.
That's right. They go back to the future. Anyway.
At some point, all they know is at some point they're ending up in 1944 and they're going to be in that picture. But we don't know the circumstances.
No, certainly not.
But they are happy. They're seemingly happy in that photo.
They look like they're having a nice time. They look that way. We'll see. So, but in this same moment, you know, Cole walks around and he is noticing all these different things that are in this room on top of the photo. And, but Jennifer has this moment where she wants to, I mean, where she actually tries to hurt herself and harm herself. And, you know, once again, Cole's like, look, this is, you know, he won't stand for it. And so, Aaron, you know, I guess you guys didn't probably shoot this in order, I'm assuming. But knowing, okay. But knowing in this script that you've gone from, you know, her protector, now I'm her freaking babysitter, maybe a little frustrated, and now she has, you know, tried to harm herself, and so now you're show a little bit more of a sensitive, or
becomes her guardian and her therapist. You know, he basically, well, it gets very serious in that moment, you know, because it's very funny to watch Jennifer spin out, and she's very antic and eccentric, and then in that moment you see the depth of her pain, and that she really is in a a dangerous mental state. So I think at that point the frustration sort of melts away, and he really sees what's happening with her, and he reaches out to her on a very human level, and that does the trick.
And as we find later in the episode, ultimately ends up being very important, which is kind of a nice message. Just throwing that out there.
Well, you mean in the fact that...
That human kindness, you know...
Is how he gets home. Yeah. How Cole finally gets home is because of Jennifer Goins.
And that she didn't forget it.
She never forgot it.
Yeah, of course not.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of kind, considering all of the mayhem and death and murder and, you know...
That's what happens when you don't just shoot somebody in the face reflexively.
Yeah.
It might lead to good karma down the road.
And that's one of the great things about a time travel show, is you can see a 30-year payoff in a matter of seconds. He could say goodbye to her, and then you get the shot of... My favorite shot of that episode is of old Jennifer, that where she finally looks up and you see her for the first time this season, and she's smiling because she's at peace now with who she's become and how, and her part in all this, and we don't know what that is. And she got Cole home, which, by the way, is huge, because Cole has not been back. He hasn't been in 2044 since episode 10 of last season. So 2043, rather. So now he's in 2044. So this is many episodes, a long time coming for Cole to finally get back to the facility.
Definitely. And Cassie comes and gets him, and it has this great payoff. Yeah, for I think all the characters. But before I think it's before Cassie comes to retrieve. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it is. We see what Cassie is willing to do back in 2044 when it comes to Ramsay. So, you know, Deacon has been tasked with sort of getting this information out of Ramsay. It's sort of not working. We haven't gotten to that. Did I miss that scene where we figure out? Oh my gosh, yeah, I totally skipped over that. But we find out about...
You started discussing that scene with the scientists. Is that what you were going to say?
I was going to say about Ramsay's the one that calls the police.
Right.
To protect Deacon.
Yeah. That was a really interesting scene to watch, because I came in at the very end of that scene, and I had to take my cue from the monitors. So I was actually watching that whole scene, even though Cassie... might have heard a little bit of it. She might have been standing outside of the room to make sure that Deacon is taking care of what he needs to get take care of. Maybe she wants to hear some information that might slip that he wouldn't catch. But I got to watch that scene between the two actors on a tiny little monitor, and it was so beautiful to watch. We actually had a couple of people that we had someone who was doing script notes that day who wasn't familiar with the first season, had only been there for a few days, was just there for maybe that episode, and she was just weeping when she was watching it, because it was an insight to this calloused, hardened man. And then also a peek at Ramsay sparing his family. And it was the way that the two of them approached it was really... Sometimes you watch a scene in person and it turns out very differently when you see it, the final product. And this was really lovely to be able to witness firsthand.
Yeah, it was a beautiful scene. And I think both of the actors really, really drove it home. So as a result, maybe not as a result, but, you know, Deacon's not getting what he needs from Ramsay.
Right.
And so Cassie goes and finds, or has... Or has Whitley do it?
Right. Whitley goes and gets Sam.
Yeah, and finds Ramsay's son.
She knows
son.
That's the whole reason. He lets it slip. Ramsay lets it slip that the reason he betrayed everyone and everything was to spare his son. And that's what leads into the story about, you know, a little something about that, don't you, Ted? Fathers and sons. And so he reveals that his most prized, not, I don't want to say possession, it's a child, but the thing he prizes most in this world is his son.
And the fact that Cassie is willing to even make the threat, even if
she baits him.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know what she would have been willing to do. She baits him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's pretty, pretty powerful, I'd say, a pretty interesting and definitive moment. It felt like as an audience member for that character, for Cassie.
Right. What we shot, there's a scene between Deacon and Cassie when Deacon comes out and he's on the verge of tears and he's sort of hyperventilating because he realizes that somebody knows about why he is the way he is. Somebody has seen beneath that surface in this secret that he's harbored for so long. And when we shot it, we shot Todd's side of it first, and then when we turned around on my side, I gave the performance that I was giving to Todd, and I guess I was delighting in the fact that we were going to taunt Ramsey with possibly murdering his son just a little bit too much. And the director, Magnus, was like, "You look sociopathic. I think you need to tone it down a little bit." So, but there was something that I felt great pleasure in just knowing what his Achilles heel was, whether she would actually do something with it or not. It's just finding that spot for this mass murderer and what he is willing to do and being able to dangle that over him. I loved it. I loved it.
It's really, but that scene is not in the final cut, is it?
No, it is in the final cut. I just had to tone down my bizarre sociopathic facial expressions.
Well, good. Look, it's only episode two, so I'm sure Cassie's going to have a long way to go, and I'm excited to see it. So meanwhile, the facility is sort of invaded by, and Jones is taken by the daughters, who we haven't seen since season one.
And specifically somebody who was watching, the yes. watcher from, yeah, the exterior of the facility who comes in.
Yes.
This ninja.
Yes. So, and Terry, I'm curious, you know, this very badass ninja, are we going to is that person going to be
you will see her again.
We will.
Yeah, she's cool.
All right, really cool. I'm gonna keep my eyes peeled then.
She's got a cool thing. Yeah.
She's got a cool thing to look forward to.
We're a real chill here on Friday afternoon. It's slightly rainy. We have a cheese plate.
We do indeed. So all right, so we
same
learned
plate from last week.
That's right. We just time traveled right. and brought it back. So, okay. So we learn here. We learn that's when we learn that, you know, Cole, because he took mercy on Jennifer, they are, you know, they're going to essentially bring him home, like we talked about. And so now that Cole has returned to 2044, everybody is there. Ramsey's there. He's still being held captive. Cole and Ramsey have this conversation where, you know, ultimately Ramsey is saying, look, you don't know her anymore. You don't know who she's become. And, you know, Aaron, I'm curious from your perspective or from Cole's perspective, what that revelation, is that a revelation to him, or is that something that he had put the pieces together beforehand?
He sees it in her already, yeah. But I think that is an interesting moment where he maybe some doubt is put into his mind. I think, you know, he wants to believe, and he says to Ramsey that she would never go that far, and he thinks he knows that, but there is that little bit of doubt because she has changed so much. So yeah, I think he's not 100% sure in that moment.
And you have another, or Cole has another interesting conversation that follows with Jones. It was very fun to have Jones and Cole sort of reunited. And Jones is finding hope in this scenario, but she still feels the need to ask Cole, are you still with me on this mission? And, you know, so Cole says yes. But I was curious, Aaron, do you think that Cole is telling the truth?
I actually do. Yeah, I really enjoy the relationship between those two characters, and it's a great bond that has developed and that grew out of some real animosity at the beginning of their relationship, and, you know, morphed into grudging respect and then into genuine affection. So yeah, I do. I think that moment is genuine, that he's, you know, he's back.
That's good. And so we sort of close out this episode with this conversation between Cole and Cassie. And where Aaron, you made the point, you know, earlier in our conversation, but it comes up here explicitly. I saved somebody who was supposed to die, and you know, that's the only thing that ever made a difference. I'm curious for both of you guys, when you're shooting this, well, because that was the first thing. Was that the first thing you guys shot?
I think it was. I think it was the first scene that Aaron
of
and I shot
season.
Of season two. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, I think it was, and you know, we didn't have the other moments of season two from the first episode or anything of the second episode leading up to that, so we had to kind of create, you know, how they played out before leading up to shooting that scene.
It was a really powerful moment, and followed by another really powerful moment where Cole shows Cassie the photo of 1944, and you know, that's kind of their next task, I suppose, because that's where we've learned the messengers have gone. So there's a lot to come from you guys. So you know, with the stakes of, it's almost as though it feels like this mini mission has been accomplished, and now we got to open up a whole nother can of worms.
But is the episodes 1 and 2 of the season are, in a weird way, the conclusion to season one, mm-hmm. and that the next episode, that's really where season two begins. Now we've set up, you know, we know where everybody is, but the mission begins in the next episode where we're going to go back to 1944.
100 years.
And you know, and now we have, but I mean, what an interesting dynamic now to have Cassie there, and in that facility, a Cassie we don't really know, who is on her own and is not being led, you know, by the hand through what the apocalypse is anymore. She has an opinion on her own as to what is going to happen here. And to have one of those great boardroom scenes, and now Cassie has a voice, I think is something to tease a bit.
And I would also, at the end of that scene, when Cole leaves the room, you know, we see some real emotion from Cassie. I believe there are tears, right? When she's sort
getting
of
choked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's...
Let's not.
Oh, gosh.
No, we can't.
No, I don't... Is that a time clock beep thing, minute maker? I think that at that moment we see Cassie reflect on the photo, which, by the way, when we shot that was not the actual photo because we hadn't yet shot that. So there are two strangers just sort of hanging out in a piece of paper that I had a photo of looking at.
You mystified.
And it's the truth, though.
Behind the scenes.
I didn't feel anything.
No, but it was almost, though, it was, I had to then create a picture in my head that was a completely, you know, a much more emotional thing for me because we hadn't yet shot that moment, obviously, and Cassie hasn't experienced that moment either. It's just seeing the two of them in happier times and a little bit of, it's not just nostalgia of what they had, it's also of what they could possibly have. And if the circumstances were different, what would they be? And if the circumstances were different, they might not even know each other. And there are so many layers to this relationship that should never be, but is also destined to be, that are very confusing and emotional for her.
Sure. And to preview, you know, I think it's safe to say that we may spend a little time in 1944.
Yeah.
So, with that being
the commercial showed it, no
okay.
doubt.
Okay. I don't know what
monkeys.
I'm never going to be the one that spoils anything.
Right,
okay.
Right.
But so with that being said, we spent an episode in 1987 in season one. You know, there's been a couple of different time periods, but 1944 is like, that's a real change. That's not like get the cell phones out of the shot.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's ambitious, and that's got to be ambitious for your actors and for the set and for
it
everything.
It was, and one of the reasons we talked about it in the previous podcast about block shooting and why it's so important to, because in this case, we can shoot all our 1940 stuff in the same week, which means we can keep those costumes and those cars. I think
the hotel, the set, to keep it all.
If we see the hotel in 1944,
what the heck are you talking about? You just talked about costumes and cars. Why can't I talk about the hotel?
You can talk about the hotel if we go to the hotel in episode 3. I'm winking.
Is
audience.
This the hotel with the hookers?
A stroke. Please send help. We're on the Universal lot.
with a cheese plate.
Yeah, we'll be the ones with the G's bite. But so we're going to spend time in 1944. Are there any other, will we see any other new time periods?
Yeah, we go everywhere. We want to.
We go everywhere. We span the globe.
We do. Everybody's just, we're starting to fade now. The cheese is getting to us. So the that'll be the fan thing they send to us now. It's just blocks of cheese. Please don't. The
I'm okay with that.
Basically, we knew we really wanted to embrace the time travel, and we wanted to do it well. We didn't want it to look like, you know, Disney's 1944, and it looked, you know, glossy. We really wanted to try. So we worked really, really, really hard on that. And we knew we wanted to do the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. It really adds, each one of these time periods when we go to it has a different look and feel. Our directors of photography, David and Boris, are amazing. They're outstanding in what they give each time period its own identity. And it's, again, it's something we wanted to do organically. The story last year just didn't take us there. You know, in 1987 was far, which we thought was cool, but they're really nostalgic, romantic places to be, you know, and not romantic necessarily in the kiss, kiss, hug, hug way. It's just that it adds such a level of depth and scope, yeah, to it that is...
If you were to have a time machine, these are places that you would want to go back to, yeah, and experience and explore, and I think that's a great aspect to this second season, is we really have fun with the machine.
Yeah. And it's fun to put these characters in period, you know, period appropriate clothing. And it was, we had to build a lot of things, you know. I mean, I remember many, 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 many wardrobe meetings with all of you. It was like getting the right hat for Cole was tricky. It was a big deal. You know, Kirk has his own opinion as to what he wanted Ramsey to wear. So that short tie, okay, I'm spoiling stuff. Well, they've seen the trailer. He has a short tie, but it's his pick, you know, and it is very specific and it's authentic.
Apparently
and the
authentic.
Cap.
None of us could believe that people wore ties that short.
Yeah,
it was bizarre.
You know, and being able to put Amanda, who looks like, I'm going to say something nice.
Yeah, you belong in that.
I'm going to say that Amanda.
Period. You take it. Something nice from Terry.
She's flummoxed.
She looks like she could be a starlet from any one of those time periods. And I think all of us, the second Amanda would step on to set, and we'd all be like, oh my God. In the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. It's really fun to be able to do that. And we hope to do a lot more of it.
Well, we have a lot to look forward to, I think. Which is very exciting.
In episode 3 called 100 Years.
I think
that's good. I think we've talked our monkey faces off.
All right,
on this
good,
one. Yeah.
Good, good, good. And we're almost out of cheese. So if we don't have the cheese, then we can't keep doing the podcast.
Thank you guys for listening. And again, if you've actually listened to this, hit us up on social media so we know.
Yes.
Please. Absolutely. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Give your feedback, questions, thoughts, things you'd maybe like to ask the cast and the team behind the scenes. Let us know.
And give your love to Clark, who is doing an amazing job, knows the show better than we do at this point.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. Thank you. My pleasure. All right, guys. Well, should we do social handles? Do you want to tell them? Tell them one more time where they can find you on the interwebs.
I'm on Twitter at Aaron A. Stanford.
Do not forget the A. That other Aaron Stanford's a monster.
F that guy. A monster. I'm at Amanda Shule.
I am at Terry Metalis.
And I am at Clark Wolf. Clark with an E, Wolf with an E. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye, guys. See you soon.